Now stay tuned for the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on 97.9 The Wren. The Wake Up Call talks with the people in Charlottesville and Albemarle County who are making a difference. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for being here on another Sunday morning. Our guest today, Professor Shilpa Dave. She's an Associate Dean at UVA's College of Arts and Sciences and a professor at Media Studies and American Studies. Professor Dave researches and teaches on topics including representations of race and gender in media, pop culture, American cultural narratives and immigration and border crossings, film, television, and literary studies. She's the author of many works, including Indian Accents, Brown Voice and Racial Performance in American Television and Film, as well as Apu's Brown Voice, Cultural Inflection, and South Asian Accents. She earned her bachelor's degree at the University of Wisconsin, master's and doctorate from the University of Michigan. And today, we're going to talk about learning from the Muppets. Professor, thanks for being here.
Hi, Rick. Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm delighted to be here and to be talking about the Muppets.
Well, I'm excited to have you here. Who doesn't want to talk about the Muppets?
I think that's one of the reasons why the topic is so popular, is because we're celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Muppets, and they're an intergenerational popular culture phenom. I mean, who hasn't heard of the Muppets? Not only are they a global sensation, but they're a national sensation. In fact, the show, one of the reasons why the show was so successful is because it was an intergenerational show. It wasn't just designed to appeal to children. It was also designed to appeal to adults. And so between the intergenerational kinds of commentary that the show made, plus the crossover media from television to film to animation to now having the release on streaming, it appeals to a lot of different people from a lot of different backgrounds and ages, too, as well.
So can you tell me, the Muppets, did they now, we're going back 50 years, and so certainly sort of before my time of paying attention, did the Muppets start on Sesame Street? I realize they were created as handheld puppets of some form, but was Sesame Street the first place that they were seen and became national in some sense? And today we're going to talk about The Muppet Show, which is where they went on one of the more standard three brand TV channels. So did they start on Sesame Street?
Actually, no, they didn't. When Jim Henson was developing The Muppets, he developed Muppets Incorporated in 1959, and Sesame Street didn't premiere until 1969. So initially when he was starting to work through with with puppets, he was a young man, and he always wanted to work in television. And so when he was interning as a student, he started to work with puppets. Now, Jim Henson, he never played with puppets, or he never even really saw a puppet show. What he was influenced by was radio, and in particularly the radio shows of Edward Bergen and Charlie McCarthy. And so what he decided to do was to work on that form of comedy. And so he went to University of Maryland, and he started collaborating with a woman named Jane Neville, who was working with art and education. And so he took his Muppets and then worked with her to develop this idea of the Muppets as an ensemble. And so Kermit came about, I guess, around 1955, and was known for the ping pong ball eyes. And everyone watched the Muppets in D.C., so it was actually sort of a local show in Washington, D.C., and they were oftentimes Muppets were the guests on late night and variety shows, but they didn't have their own show, and where he started making money was actually through commercials. So there was this famous coffee company called the Wilkins Coffee Branch, and the Muppets started advertising for Wilkins Coffee, and it was a huge sensation in Washington, D.C. And after that, he incorporated the Muppets, and before he graduated from college, he was the CEO of Muppets Incorporated. And that is sort of how he came to the national scene, was through commercials. And then in 1960, he actually met Frank Oz. And many people talk about the collaboration between Jim Henson and Frank Oz, many of who know him as the voice of Yoda, but who he joined sort of the company of Muppets, and the rest was history. Now, Sesame Street came about in 1969, and that was a show that was particularly funded for educational purposes. So the idea behind Sesame Street was to work towards educational programming and children's programming, and particularly to breach the gap between nursery schools and preschools and going to kindergarten and elementary school. And a lot of the mission behind Sesame Street was about social responsibility and interracial harmony. And the emphasis was on looking at the relationship between the people and the Muppets. And that's the key area there, is that was educational, and it was also geared towards children, a children's audience.
We are talking about the Muppets today with Professor Shilpa Dave today from University of Virginia. Professor, so a lot of the hour is going to be spent talking about the Muppet Show. Can you remind us about the Muppet Show?
Yes. Yeah, so the Muppet Show, which is different from Sesame Street, which was geared towards educational programming and children's programming, while the Muppet Show was really geared towards more of an adult or intergenerational audience. Instead of being on public television, it was on network television. It was, depending upon when you watched it, usually on a Saturday or Sunday evening. And it was really trying to get families to watch it together. And it was more based, I would say, on a situation comedy kind of format, but it was set in a vaudeville theater. So the beauty of The Muppet Show was that it was genre-breaking. And what I mean by that is that it took different kinds of television narratives that we had grown accustomed to seeing over the 50s and 60s and 70s, such as comedy shows, such as variety shows, such as late night shows, and even news shows. And it lampooned all of those with a cast of Muppets in which you usually had one or maybe two human guest stars. But the ensemble cast was the Muppets. And the key element about the show was that it really showed the behind-the-scenes kind of events that were happening, as well as producing a show. And so what we got to see was an interior look at what happens behind the scenes, and at all times we, as the audience, were seeing a show, but looking behind the scenes, too, as well.
Was this the first time that the Muppets had regularly been on one of the three major networks?
Yes. they had their, it was their own headlining show. So before they had been guest stars, but what we started to see was Kermit the Frog was probably the most recognizable when the show started. And then you started to see other characters come to light. And nowadays we have in celebrity culture, people know about Miss Piggy and they know about Kermit or Gonzo or Rolf. But initially it was Kermit who was seen as sort of the behind the scenes manager. And then we were slowly introduced to different kinds of characters, such as Fozzie Bear, and such as, you know, the Electric Light Orchestra, which as ELO, actually it wasn't called, that was called Electric Mayhem, which is a spoof on the rock bands, and other kinds of individuals. And then they would bring on guest stars from all different kinds of shows, but premium guest stars, everyone from Harry Belafonte to Julie Andrews to Peter Sellers to John Denver. And so I think that's always the interesting part about it, is that it really did do the variety show, but it also brought in different people from different elements of popular culture, too, as well.
What time frame are we talking about here? We're talking about the 70s, correct?
Yeah, the late 70s. So I think what we're looking at is, this is when we're thinking about sitcoms and we're also thinking about satire, social satire as we know it, like with The Simpsons, hadn't happened yet. What had started was Saturday Night Live, which started just about a year previous to that. And so we started to see social and cultural satire come up in late night, but we hadn't seen it in little pre-prime time, is what I would call it. And this was a way in which the Muppets could be seen as puppets, could be seen as appealing to a younger audience, but as I mentioned before, it was also appealing to adults because the genres they were playing with were different kinds of television shows that we had grown up with. One of my favorites was Pigs in Space, because you would watch it and it was really looking, and this was before Star Wars, and then after Star Wars they actually brought in C-3PO and R2-D2 and Mark Hamill as guest stars. But Pigs in Space was about different kinds of space shows. So they lampooned Star Trek and Lost in Space. And as I said, later on, then it sort of preceded the Star Wars phenomenon. And that was the fun of it. It became a joy to watch because of trying to figure out, you know, what it lampooned for the adults, and for the children, just laughing at a lot of the slapstick kind of comedy that was very evident on the show.
So you talk about the Muppets being streamed, you mentioned earlier. So they've just been added, or earlier in the year, a few months ago, the Muppets have been added to Disney Plus. And one of the things that brought news out was that Disney Plus put in content warning at the beginning of 18 episodes, I believe. And I'm going to read the content warning. This program includes negative depictions and/or mistreatment of people or cultures. These stereotypes were wrong then and are wrong now. Rather than remove this content, we want to acknowledge its harmful impact, learn from it, and spark conversation to create a more inclusive future together. Can you talk about what sort of material generates content warning from Disney Plus in regards to The Muppet Show?
Rick, I'm really glad that you asked this question. I think with The Muppets and with any kind of series, that are older, as we think about media history, that we often have to think about the context and of when the show aired and what was happening then and what was happening now. And in order to be a good consumer of popular culture and also a good consumer sort of media history, you have to understand what the show was trying to accomplish and also why things might be outdated. And I think with the content warning, what Disney is trying to do is to say, we don't want to eliminate these programs because we think that they are important, part of media history. But we do want you to be aware that there might be certain kinds of stereotypes that we don't agree with anymore. And we want to alert you to that. I would hope they would go even further and help let people know about what kinds of stereotypes were happening rather than just sort of putting that warning out. And I think that's the next step that the corporations could go in. But what they were really looking at and the shows that I've watched and then rewatched was a lot about the ways in which different kinds of groups were caricatured, and that there were different kinds of racist depictions, oftentimes of different kinds of ethnic and racial groups, both in and out of the United States. And the idea that depicting ethnic caricature no longer applies is very, very important, because at the time, especially, when you would see a caricature of a particular group, like Latinos or Asians other groups, people would laugh at it and think it was a kind of comedy because it was not seen as what was normalized. But what was not understood was the fact that this was sometimes the only way that anybody was introduced to difference, to people from different backgrounds, different cultural backgrounds, different national backgrounds, different racial backgrounds. And so if that was the only kind of image that people were seeing, they tended to take that image and apply it to everybody who they thought looked or sounded like the person that they heard on television. And so a lot of these episodes are really asking you to relook at what the caricature might have been. Now, I am a huge fan of the Muppets and love them. But when I went back and watched some of these, even I had to cringe a little bit at the kind of comedy that was going on. And there were certain kinds of shows where you were like, okay, maybe this was okay to have at the time, like Johnny Cash in, singing in front of the Confederate flag with, you know, white puppet ghosts surrounding him. But now it causes discomfort because we know that was wrong. And it was wrong then, too, as well, but nobody really said anything about it. But now we are able to say that this really doesn't work. And Johnny Cash is still going to be Johnny Cash. But I think what we need to think about is, in the time that we are living in now, what is the image that we would rather see?
Again, our guest today is Professor Shilpa Dave, as we talk about learning from the Muppets. Professor Dave is a professor of media studies and American studies at the University of Virginia. Let's take our first break. We'll come back. Lots more to talk about and learn from the Muppets. Hang tight, everybody. And thank you for being here with us today, everybody. Sunday morning wake-up call, learning from the Muppets with Professor Shilpa Dave, at University of Virginia's Associate Dean, College of Arts and Sciences, teaching us not everything we need to know, but certainly more than we knew before we started. Professor, we were talking about the content warning that was placed on 18 of the more than 100 episodes of The Muppet Show. And you had mentioned the Johnny Cash episode, performing in front of a Confederate flag with some of the other images that were going on. Can you talk about some of the other shows that received content warning and what might have brought Disney Plus to, I'll use the phrase, tag them?
Yes. I think two things, because your question brings up a good point about the specific episodes, and then more generally, how do we react to these tags in thinking about what we loved as young people, and now 50 years later, how do we relate to what we loved, knowing that there were some problems with the depictions? And so I think one of the things we want to really identify within ourselves as audience members, but also as good cultural consumers, is that we can be flexible and we have the ability to change. And something that we loved when we were young and that we thought was funny may not be as funny now. That doesn't mean we still don't love it. But I think the idea is that we can change the way that we think about what it is that we held on to about from a particular show or from a particular kind of tradition. And that's what the key issue is here, I think, in these content warnings, but also in thinking about individual episodes. So when I was watching some of the tagged episodes, as well as some of the other episodes, too, as well, I was enjoying myself because these are still the great stars of the 100 episodes in these 5 years, and you get to see great performances. One of the tagged episodes featured Peter Sellers, and Peter Sellers, great, British comedian, but he's also known for putting on brown makeup and acting as South Asian characters, as Arab characters, as French characters. And in this case, he was acting as one of the Roma, or was known at that time as gypsies. And in one episode, it really didn't just feature him, singing. It was more like he was doing a comedy sketch from one of his own shows where he was exaggerating every kind of negative type of stereotype associated with someone from the Roma. And that could be whether or not, this person was trustworthy, whether this person, you could take them at, would hide things from you. And so there were certain kinds of stereotypes that did not play well. And so I noticed that right away. There was another one where I think Spike Mulligan was in the episode, and he was also a British host. I think it's a Goon Show, I think is what he did. And there was a Festival of Nations where they had something relating to the rising sun. And so it was very, a lot of the puppets had the eyes that were with the epicanthic fold. So they were, almond-shaped eyes, but really physically looking at these characters in a way in which it racialized them as not normal and made it funny, too, as well. So it was very anti-Asian. And so there were a couple of them that did not work that well. There was another one with Steve Martin, too, as well, where he was dressing up or exaggerating or doing different kind of caricatures of racialized characters and speaking in a different kind of language that was seen as nonsensical and making that what was funny about his sketch. And so those are the kinds of things that I think you have to worry about, where it's the exaggeration of people with from diverse backgrounds that lead to stereotypes where there are not very many alternatives. And puppets, like animation, are actually really prone to this because they rely on physicality. They rely on exaggeration. And what it also points to is that this is not about skin color. What this is it's a racialization that is really rooted in costumes. It's rooted in the way physical features of people. It's also rooted in the way people speak, or even the food they eat, or the kinds of behaviors they exhibit. So it really pushes the way in which we think about racialization, not as skin color, but as alternatives, or things that I've called accents. So it's not just a vocal accent. It could be a cultural accent that is exaggerated to put another kind of racial or ethnic group or racial group down in compared to what is seen as the norm, which is whiteness.
Professor Shilpa Dave here as we talk about the Muppet Show. Professor, you watched the Muppet Show in the 70s when it originally came out, or just watched it in syndication, but you're not watching it for the first time now as it's streaming. Is that correct?
That is correct. No, I watched it as a child, and also saw it in syndication too as well, and then now I'm watching them again streaming and enjoying watching them too as well. I think what we're seeing is we're seeing the emergence of a lot of old shows coming back and being streamed again. Everything from the Dick Van Dyke Show and the Mary Tyler Moore Show to I Love Lucy has been streamed for a while. Star Trek was something that I watched in syndication too as well. So there have been older shows that have been rerun over and over again on syndication, but The Muppet Show really wasn't available. It was available, I think, as a DVD set in 2009, and for the first time, streaming all at once, where you can watch all the different episodes one after one. And as I said, it is really a who's who of the Broadway world, of the film world, of the comedy world, and I saw great people. I mean, if you think about the guest stars, it's like Rita Moreno was on it. It's one of the best shows ever. She's fantastic. And so I think that that there are really great things to be learned from watching the show, and you can enjoy it too. But I also do believe that as we grow older, and even as we watch with younger people, that there is a way in which we can think about what is it about, you know, that we are nostalgic for when we watch these shows, because we are reliving a certain kind of childhood. But it's also understanding that some of the things that we accepted as children, or that were given to us as children, need to be changed. And I think that we are flexible enough and hopeful enough that we can. And I think what putting these kinds of warnings on, or at least alerting people to that things have changed, really gives us an opportunity to show people that, yes, there were mistakes that were made. And yes, we have made mistakes as individuals and as a culture, but that we can learn to change some of that. And this is the first step, is putting those contact warnings. And as I mentioned before, I think the next step is really working on educating people in different ways. And it doesn't just have to be in the classroom. It can also be corporations can say, you know, let's do these sort of mini lessons where we're like, this is what we're looking at. This is in order to be a socially responsible person, in order to be a good media consumer, these are the kinds of things that you need to think about, especially in the global world that we're living in.
So let me ask you this two-part question then. If I'm curious, you watched the show when you were a child, you said. So I want to know if you recognized any of this material at the time to be, I'll use the word, offensive. And then I'm curious as to at what age are children cognizant of offensive rather than just not understanding a poor attempt at humor?
I think that a lot of studies have been done in terms of audience and viewer influence, and that was one of the reasons why public television was really created and Sesame Street was created, was to have a show that was educational and geared specifically towards children to be educational and to promote interracial harmony. And so Sesame Street, which I did watch as a very little person, really did show that, there were interracial relations. I remember Gordon and Susan a lot of different ways in which they talked about race, and they talked about also feeling sad and also feeling confused. The Muppet Show was never about education. It was always created to be entertainment and not created to be children's programming. And so because it was not part of that, it did have humor that was considered to be more adult. And so even though children watched it because there were puppets involved, and so it was seen as child-friendly, it wasn't necessarily a children's show. And if you think about the other kinds of situation comedies that were happening at this time, I mean, everything from the Mary Tyler Moore Show to All in the Family to variety shows like the Sonny and Cher Show, this was the model that it was going after. And so, yes, I do think that children are influenced at a very young age. And one of the things that I remember when I was young was that I did not see myself on television. So that there were things that I was laughing at, but seeing someone that looked like me was very rare on American television. And if it was, it was oftentimes seen as a caricature. So when they showed people from India, it was somebody like, Sabu, who was from the 50s, from Tarzan movies, or Sabu the Elephant Boy. Or it was someone like Haji, actually, from Johnny Quest, which was a animated show, who was brown-skinned and from India, but he also had, like, mystical powers and was sort of Johnny Quest's best friend. That's the one that I remember when I was very little. And then you start to see a couple more here and there. But it wasn't my life. I mean, I was growing up here in the United States, and the images of India that were given were not ones that I recognized, but really ones that were coming out of sort of the British Raj of the 1920s and 1930s. In fact, the film that came out, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, which was shot in India, showed, many people talk about this, showed people eating monkey brains. And that doesn't happen in India. And yet, I remember I went to that movie, and my best friend, who was a white woman, asked me in the movie theater, "Do you guys really do that?" And so there is this effect that happens. And I, of course, said no, we don't. But the fact that, we're asking and kids ask is important, I think, because we do ask each other if it's your friend. But if you don't know, and that's the only image that you see, that's the assumption you make when you talk to someone else. And so if someone who saw that movie met me and said, you're of Indian heritage, do you guys eat monkey brains? Where are they getting that from? They're getting that from these type of images in which it's the only image that they see, as opposed to a lot of different images. And I think, you know, what the Muppet Show did is it exaggerated and caricatured white ethnic stereotypes as well as racialized stereotypes. But with white ethnic stereotypes, you see all the variety under the role of whiteness. But with racialized stereotypes, you don't see that variety. You only see one. And so as a child and even as an adult, it's often difficult to separate what you see represented on the screen and your everyday life.
I'm curious. You mentioned the Muppet Show, or you mentioned going to a movie and your best friend at the time asking you about eating monkey brains, because that was what the movie showed, and so it was doing that little bit of teaching. So what was the Muppet Show teaching during its 100 episodes, teaching through entertainment, if anything?
Oh, yes. And I mean, I think a lot of people say, oh, that's just entertainment. But entertainment is highly, it's a socializing kind of experience. It's definitely politicized. And it does teach us about different kinds of interactions. I mean, think about, where do people learn about romance? Right? Or especially young people. Well, they watch television and they watch the movies, right? That's how we learn about different kinds of rituals, too. And these are not documentary films. They're television shows or they're movies. So, you know, there are teen genres. There are science fiction genres. How do we learn to interact with people who are not like us? Science fiction is a great way to think about that, because we're dealing with human-alien kinds of interactions. And that's just another way of thinking about working or meeting people who are unlike you, if someone is alien to you. And so this is what science fiction does for us, which I think is really great and can be really, really progressive in a lot of different ways. But it also can be regressive, too, as well. And we've had a lot of different genres in media history that show historically ways in which certain kinds of events are depicted. And so if we're looking to the future, we look to science fiction. If we're looking to the past, we can look at genres like the Western. And I think they teach us very important ways and important lessons of social, political, and economic interactions between all different kinds of people.
Still learning from the Muppets. Today we're learning from Professor Shilpa Dave about the Muppets. Let's take our second break, everybody. Hang tight. Stay with us. Much more to go. Be right back. Again, learning from the Muppets, Professor Shilpa Dave. So, Professor, you mentioned earlier in the show about when we have these tagged shows because of the content, that starting with a content warning is the place to begin. I think I paraphrased that properly. Do they have different rewards for content warning versus refusal to distribute or no longer play? And are there ever times when no longer playing a piece of entertainment is ever the correct answer, in your opinion?
No, I I think everything should be out there for us to study, because how else can we learn, right? So I don't believe in getting rid of older kinds of narratives. I do believe in putting them into a context so that we can show this is what was being made then, because I think it's a really important part of our history. We need to know our history and the kinds of errors and the kinds of missteps, as well as the good things that happened, in order for us to progress. And if we just start burying things that we don't like, we're doomed to repeat them. And so I think it's important to say, oh my gosh, was this really something that happened? Because otherwise the silences are deafening. And it's important to see that what was acceptable in society at a certain point of time is something that we don't want to go back to. And again, as I mentioned before, how else will we learn otherwise?
So the Sesame Street Muppets have often been rewarded for leading the way with acceptance and changing thoughts and influence. Did the Muppet Show Muppets lead or just follow the same path as other entertainment at the time?
I think that's a really good question. Again, part of that is that Sesame Street is really, the mission of Sesame Street is designed to be educational programming. And it's often, and initially was funded by government grants, whereas the Muppets and Muppets Incorporated is always seen as a profit-driven enterprise. And I think that's what we really need to think about when we think about the Muppets and entertainment, is that the underlying idea behind it is capitalism and making money for the company. And when Disney went into partnership with Jim Henson in the 1990s, and actually in the mid-1980s. So, you know, the Muppets have had a really long trajectory in U.S. media and in world media. As I said, with the Muppet Show, it was on television until 1981. And then what Jim Henson did is he took it to Hollywood and made three films, which were wildly successful. It was The Muppet Movie, it was The Muppets Take Manhattan, and The Great Muppet Caper. And so on the big screen, you suddenly saw all of these characters, and you saw their origin story in The Muppet Movie, an alternative in sort of putting together a show in The Muppets Take Manhattan, and then a play on sort of the heist film in The Great Muppet Caper. And so they were still doing the same things, but it introduced a whole new group of people to the Muppets. And Disney was really interested in acquiring and doing a partnership with Jim Henson. And so they did do so, and they built a whole theater in Walt Disney World. And at the time it was called MGM Studios, and now it's called Disney Hollywood Studios. And they built a life-sized version of the Muppet Theater, which you could go and experience a 3D kind of show. And I actually went and did that in the 90s. It was quite fun, where you go and you sit in the theater, and it's exactly the same that you see on the television show. And people come out, and then they had a 3D experience where, you know, they would, you know, Fozzie Bear would have water come out of a flower in his lapel, and that would squirt you. And so it was quite fun, actually. And then after Jim Henson died, they continued to have a relationship too, as well. And the Muppets really do fit, you know, the Disney model, and part of that is that you want to be intergenerational, and you want to be family friendly, so you're seen as catering to all different groups, and you want to be seen as profitable, too, as well. And so the Muppets being acquired by Disney Plus and streaming on Disney Plus is really a good match for Disney. And also increasing their consumer base. But also with Disney putting on this content warning, they also are reminding people that we have other properties which are addressing these issues. So even if these older kinds of shows don't talk about, you know, don't have the content that you're looking for, some of our newer shows through Pixar with like the film Soul or something like Raya and the Last Dragon, they do. And so part of the message I think that Disney is sending is we are putting on the old, you know, we have the older older kinds of elements, but we also are moving towards a future that recognizes our new consumers do want to see themselves and do want to see different kinds of stories than what was in the past.
Talking about the Muppets today with Professor Shilpa Dave, who was just making us all jealous by telling us that she went down and saw the most sensational, inspirational, celebrational, Muppetational Muppet show in the theater. So, Professor, I want to know your thoughts on 40 or 50 years from now. Will society shake its head at what a large group thought was funny and allowable?
It's very possible that they could. I mean, I think every generation, believes that they are the most progressive and doing and being the most socially responsible. And so as we progress, part of that is going to depend upon the kind of social environment and the political environment that we have. And I think what we're seeing right now is in the cultural moment that we're living in is that there is a very real struggle about how we look at our historical past and what that means for our future. And I think every generation is going to have it, but I think we are at a touchstone type of moment where our younger generations are really pushing to change the way that we see things in the past and how we progress in the future. And this younger generation has lived through a lot. If you think about it in the 21st century, I think generations are even getting smaller. Before, it used to be every 16 years. But if you think of major events that are happening in the 21st century, starting with, 9/11, the election of Barack Obama, the crash that happened, the rise of conservatism and Donald Trump, the election process that was happening with Joe Biden and the first, multiracial Asian American and African American vice president, to the coronavirus and the pandemic that was happening. There's a lot that has happened in 21 years. And I think when we look back on this time, we're going to realize it's very tumultuous. But I would also say that if you look back 100 years ago and you look at all the technological achievements that was happening between 1900 and 1921, it was similar, the kinds of things that were happening, because there was a sea change in the population because of changing immigration populations. There was the beginning of the film industry. There was a world war. There was the Spanish flu pandemic, and there were racial riots as well, and racial strife too, as well as the rise of a African American middle class that led to the Harlem Renaissance. So it's interesting that I think that every time period will have this way in which they look back at each other. I mean, this has happened before, and a lot of it is the confluence of technology and populations and what's happening globally that we see these major shifts that are going on.
So, Professor, I should have asked this question much earlier in the show. I'd like to know your favorite Muppet from the Muppet Show and why that Muppet is your favorite.
I love Fozzie Bear. I love them all. And, of course, we all want to be Kermit, who is the most likable. But I particularly like Fozzie because I think he's a well-meaning, really good guy who goes out and tries his best, and he often doesn't do well. And yet he still keeps on trying. And I like the fact that he's resilient and that he gets real support from the people around him. And I think that's what the Muppet Show really shows, is that we are not alone, that even when their whole cast goes through disaster, whether, you know, the theater collapses unto itself, or, you know, a guest star doesn't show up, or, you know, there's a rampage of some of their extras that destroys things, or, you know, Kermit loses his voice, or whatever happens, that they get through it, and they come back every show and do a show because they're a resilient group who really support each other. And that's what I love about the Muppets, is that it shows, I think it shows all of us that despite everything that's happening, that not only must the show go on, but that they are not alone. They support each other, even when things aren't going well. And so I love Fozzie, and the other person I love is Gonzo, Gonzo the Great, who's the artist, who is the daredevil, who takes chances and tries different kinds of ideas. And again, they don't always work, but he really does try to do, you know, to be sort of a performance artist. And I guess that appeals to me as a person who loves theater and loves literature and loves media, is that he tries different kinds of things.
Well, I have to say that Fozzie is also my favorite. So,
that's good to know. Who's your second favorite?
Maybe Animal. I like the way the animal comes in and maybe causes a little chaos. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. So I'd like to know if acknowledging the mistreatment of cultures in our favorite shows from our past that maybe we're just now recognizing diminishes the positive feelings and memories. You know, if we love the Muppet Show, and now they're tagged, and we're going to sit down and watch them and recognize that Johnny Cash was playing in front of a Confederate flag, and we're of the feelings that that's wrong, should we watch the Muppet Show anymore?
I think you can. I mean, for my part, yes, I believe that if you know, you can go ahead and you can still love popular culture and yet also be a critic too as well, and critique it and say, you know, this is what's working, but this is problematic. And what I usually do in my class is I say, well, if you had a chance to rewrite this script or redo the set, how would you do that so that it would be more reflective of the message that you would like to see? And that's a way that we can take what was there, and then we can sort of examine what is not working and why, and then give our own selves a chance to sort of rewrite it. And I think that is the positive kind of thing that we can and elements that we can do. I still love the Muppets. I'm still going to watch it. I'm still going to watch older kinds of narratives too, as well, because I do feel like every time we watch them, we still have a lot to learn. What I don't want people to do is just say, oh, we're just going to watch them and we're not going to change anything. Instead, I think part of the process of us evolving, but also of us, still recognizing that we can change too, is actually participating in that change and saying, well, this part works, this doesn't, and let's then watch something else to sort of give it a counter narrative too, as well.
So we are down to probably our last question, 2 minutes left. How is society learning and changing fast enough, or is this just the speed at which we're in?
That's a very large question.
But I'm only giving you 2 minutes.
I think generationally, people are at different speeds, right? And so for people who grew up watching the Muppets, it's sometimes it might be a little bit slower to change, whereas people who are seeing it in streaming might be like, well, that's definitely not something that we can relate to. And so what we need to think about is, if we are at different speeds, how do we, as an intergenerational culture, talk to each other across those speeds and narratives so that we can at least say that we're going in a direction where all of us can participate? And I think that's the key thing, is that not everyone is always going to be at the same speed and at the same rate of change, but I think we should be able to try and work the best we can with it. And there are times where, you know, younger generations need to push the older generations, and change needs to be more rapid than older generations might like. And then there are other times that maybe older generations might be like, wait a minute, historically I've seen this, and maybe we need to go a little bit slower. I think there needs to be dialogue. I don't think there's just one speed. I think there's multiple speeds, and that we can learn to dialogue and talk about that. There's not just one way towards change. There are multiple ways. And so what I hope is that the Muppets becomes a template for people to have discussions about how do we see change in terms of media representation.
All right. Our guest today, Professor Shilpa Dave from UVA's Department of Media Studies and American Studies. She's also an Association Dean at the College of Arts and Sciences. And we've been learning from the Muppets, but through Professor Dave. Professor, thank you so much for being here. Fascinating hour and fun as well.
Thank you, Rick. I really enjoyed talking with you. You have a great day.
And you as well.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on Real Oldies 97.9 The Wren. The Wake Up Call is produced by Dan Gould. Show archives can be found at cvillepodcast.com. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for The Wake Up Call, only on 97.9 The Wren.